Hello, this is Mary Moreland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, April 25th, 2024. OSF Heart of Mary Medical Center, two gifts who keep on giving. Volunteers' dedication to gift shop results in its dedication to them. When Phyllis Robeson and Marianne Ludke arrived at OSF Heart of Mary Medical Center on Wednesday morning, both thought they were attending a ceremony aimed at recognizing the Urbana Hospital's volunteer manager. Little did the two know, staff had gathered with a cake and plaque dedicating the hospital's gift shop in their name to honor the combined 40,000 hours of volunteer service they had provided to the facility over the course of approximately 50 years. That in itself is a gift to this hospital, the patients we serve, our visitors, and our partners, said Cindy Magsaman, OSF's Major Gifts Officer, while addressing Robeson and Ludke after the reveal. Are you surprised? Slightly, just slightly, Robeson said, laughing while the crowd applauded. Ludke estimated she started volunteering at the hospital in 1963, when it was still known as Mercy Hospital and before it merged with Burnham Hospital, because she always had a soft place in her heart for the place she gave birth to two of her children. Similarly, Robeson estimated she started volunteering at Burnham Hospital in 1970, as she had always been fascinated with the medical field, but gained an affinity for the center after she spent 3.5 months there following the birth of her son. At that time, not everyone could enter her room, so Robeson appreciated the volunteers who visited her while in recovery. That experience led her to volunteer to visit patients in kind. Ludke recalled that when she first started volunteering, she brought mothers the developed film photos nurses had taken of their newborns. Eventually, the two became the principal runners of the hospital's gift shop. They organized displays, ran the register, traveled to Chicago to acquire inventory, ultimately fundraising for new ambulances and welcoming those who needed someone to talk to. We served as a sounding board for people that had someone in the hospital they were visiting, Robeson said. They would come in and we would just be people they felt they could comfortably talk to and sort of help them, relieve them, so it was more than just selling items. Robeson's daughter, Kim Robeson-Schwenk, noted her family operated the long-running Champagne Robeson's department store. After it closed in 1990, it was helpful for her mother to get her fix in the retail world through the hospital's gift shop, she said. For a while, all of our gifts, Christmas, birthdays, would come from the OSF's gift shop. And she's been here as it changed hands through the years. It's really a big passion of hers, Kim said. So this is truly the perfect honor for her. We always thought that this was her job to be here, and it was her job. She loved it, Robeson's son Eric said. I go out in public, and I always hear, oh, I saw your mother today. So many people just saw her on a regular basis. Linda Tauber Olson, the hospital's volunteer manager, estimated the hospital has more than 100 volunteers who improve the patient experience in different ways, such as by knitting winter wear, greeting those at the front desk, and sitting with them going through hard time. But Tauber Olson said you don't often encounter volunteers like Robeson and Ludke, who each gave more than 20,000 hours to the hospital. She added that the two have gone on to train actual hospital employees like herself. I didn't know anything about retail, so it was from Marianne and Phyllis that I learned how to run that gift shop, Tauber Olson said. They actually ran it. I did what they told me to do. When asked where the dedication comes from, Ludke simply said she was a perpetual volunteer, starting out first as a Girl Scout leader before she became the president of her parent-teacher association. It was something she enjoyed. It's just something ingrained in you you want to help, Ludke said. I never felt it was a chore. Trailblazer remembered as a great human doing. She was the first female member of the Parkland College Board, the initial woman granted membership in Champagne Rotary, and the first woman president of a burial vault company in the nation. Barbara Bonnie Kelly's life was far-reaching and forward-looking. That's the description several people have of Ms. Kelly, who passed away April 9th, at age 82. I used to say she wasn't a human being, she was a human doing, daughter Libby Eyre said. She wouldn't have down times unless it was on vacation. She enjoyed being busy. She was incredible. She was absolutely incredible. Perhaps it was another first in her life. She might have been the first student in Champaign High School to become a state champion baton majorette. Ms. Kelly was a person of science and a person of education. After earning a degree of Bachelor of Science degree in clinical pathology at Eastern Illinois University, she worked as a medical technician. While earning her master's degree in education at the University of Illinois, Ms. Kelly taught at Parkland College. At Illinois, she was a member and later advisor of the Delta 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 sorority. She was also served as a docent at Krannert Art Museum. Her involvement with Parkland extended to serving on the Board of Trustees for more than 30 years, beginning in 1987, including time as board chair. Fellow trustee Jim Ayers of Monticello called her a great board member, a true stabilizer. While Ms. Kelly didn't have an agriculture background, Ayers said, she definitely realized how important having a good agricultural education for our students, our college, and the economy. I really miss her. She was just an all-around great supporter of Parkland College and a great board member. Fellow Parkland board member Lynn Warfel recalled Ms. Kelly's a wonderful woman and a pillar of the community. She was just delightful, very sharp and quick, Warfel said. She was a numbers person. When I was chair of the Parkland board, I would call on Bonnie and she would be right on the money with the analysis of dollars and cents. I don't ever remember there being a meeting when she was not there. Miss Kelly later became president of Kelly Vault Company, owned by her former husband Roland's family. My dad was very supportive that she's go ahead and do that, her said. There were no other women in the U.S. running burial vault companies. Her said her mother soon began winning sales awards at the national level. She also modernized the company and saw where the funeral home industry was headed, putting in a crematory before many companies were willing to do so. She also served as president of the Champaign Chamber of Commerce and co-chair of the Krannert Marquis Council. In another first, after a national court ruling barred all male service clubs from excluding women, Champaign Rotary voted to accept Kelly into its membership. Jim Acheson wasn't one of those who voted in favor. I was way outnumbered, said Acheson, who now looks back on his vote and said he erred. I changed my mind dramatically on that, Acheson said. We've had some terrific women in running our Rotary Club. I was dead wrong. Acheson said Miss Kelly didn't give him a hard time for voting against her membership. To the contrary, following the death of his wife, they later became companions. We went together for 8 years and never had a bad word between us, he said. We had 8 great years. I tell people she got me to 90 years old, and those 8 years were very enjoyable. Miss Kelly loved to travel, and that was evident in her early years. At age 19, she began giving pike tours and was hired as a tour guide in Europe. She was a pretty quick study, Hurst said. Besides education, her passion was travel. Hurst said when her mom traveled, she visited 6 continents. It generally lasted at least a month at a time in one place, so she could immerse herself in that country's culture. Her last trip was going to be with my husband and myself to take a small boat trip up the Nile to go to Egypt and the Holy Land, Hurst said. The trip, however, was canceled due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Not being able to take that trip was heartbreaking for her, because that would have been our last trip with her. A funeral mass for Ms. Kelly was celebrated April 17th at Holy Cross Catholic Church, Champaign. Burial was in Mount Olive Cemetery, Urbana. Urbana schools to pay $200,000 to settle discrimination lawsuit. In 2017, 52-year-old middle school teacher Chuck Kaplinski filed a discrimination charge against Urbana School District 116 with the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, alleging that his salary was lower than what it should have been based on the district's salary scale. The EEOC then filed an age discrimination lawsuit against the school district and teachers union on Kaplinski's behalf in 2018. Now, after 6 years, the school district has agreed to a settlement and will pay a total of $206,301 to Kaplinski and other affected teachers, EEOC officials announced. I'm glad that it was reached, Kaplinski said. I think that it's more fair. It took far too long. It's been 6 years in the making, but I think they finally arrived at a fair settlement was reached. U.S. District Court Judge Sue Myerscough issued an order, an opinion in the case in November. Myerscough found that the school district violated the Age Discrimination in Employment Act, ADEA, between 2014 and 2020 by capping the salaries of teachers over 45 to avoid pension contribution surcharges. They also found that the district was liable for a total of $51,093 in back base pay and supplemental pay for about 30 teachers. Both the EEOC and the school district have confirmed that this amount is included within the $206,301 settlement. The school district does not have any additional comment on the matter, said USD 116 Director of Communications and Marketing Catherine Tellez. The EEOC's complaint alleged that the Urbana School District violated the ADEA by limiting raises for many teachers over age 45 and all teachers over age 50. The agency also alleged that these teachers' supplemental pay was limited. EEOC officials said the agency's lawsuit challenged a provision of the collective bargaining agreement that limited raises for teachers who are within 10 years of retirement eligibility to no more than 6%. In 2005, Illinois legislators updated state law in an attempt to address the practice of making teacher pensions larger by increasing salaries prior to retirement. The Illinois State Pension Code provides that if a teacher's final average salary for purposes of calculating pension benefits includes a year in which the teacher received a salary increase of more than 6%, the school district must contribute to the teacher's retirement system to cover the increased pension cost attributable to the salary increase over 6%, EEOC officials explained. Following the change in state law, the Urbana School District included a 6% cap on teachers' total annual earnings in its 2007 contract with the Urbana Education Association, and the same provision was included in the party's next contract in 2012. In 2014, the provision requiring school districts to pay a surcharge to the pension fund on salary increases over 6% began to apply to all teachers, not just those nearing retirement. However, Myerscough found that the school district did not update its contract to reflect the change. Myerscough ordered the district to reimburse 32 impacted teachers for lost wages, the EEOC said. However, the agency also sought additional wages for some of the same teachers and others not included in the summary judgment decision. The settlement eliminates the need for a trial on additional damages and provides monetary relief to 40 teachers who lost wages between 2015 and 2020 because of the collective bargaining agreement provision, EEOC officials said. The district and union agreed to a collective bargaining agreement that eliminated the discriminatory compensation provision starting with the 2021 school year. The court approved a consent decree resolving the suit on April 17th, the agency said. In addition to the payments for teachers, the three-year decree also prohibits the district from limiting teachers' ability to earn raises due to age and prohibits retaliation against anyone who participated in the case or complained of age discrimination. Top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. Thanks to Counselor Patty Knott and Heritage High for putting a whale of a career day on Wednesday. Several of the dozens of presenters were graduates of Heritage, happy to return to Broadlands and share their expertise. It was neat how students like Olivia Wallace, Cohen Sands, Gwen Happ, Destiny Morgan, and Riley Miller got a kick out of seeing themselves in our print editions. Much thanks goes to Heritage High School confidential correspondent Lily Montgomery, who writes weekly about the Hawks. Also in the library, there's a wall covered with newspaper clippings about students and staff assembled by librarian aide Teresa Hooker. Very cool. A reminder, our newspaper is available to talk shop if your service club, classroom, church group, etc. would like us to swing by. University of Illinois, Seibel School of Computing and Data Science, new name, new department. The University of Illinois Department of Computer Science is a department no longer. It's becoming the Seibel School of Computing and Data Science, thanks to a donation from its new namesake. Alumnus Thomas Seibel has already made his mark on campus with his name on Centers for Design and Computer Science, and he's doing it again with this $50 million gift. This new school will still be a part of the Granger College of Engineering. It's both an elevation because the school is a higher level entity, and it's recognizing that we do things that traditional departments don't, said Department Head Nancy Amato. The department already includes 17 degrees. Only one is purely computer science, while the remaining 16 blend in other disciplines, usually outside of Granger. The switch won't be official until it's approved by the U of I Board of Trustees, as well as the Illinois Board of Higher Education. But Amato already has a pretty good idea of what the future will look like. Not much will change for students since titles of individual degree programs don't include department names anyway, and classes are more likely to be added than taken away. The extra resources, like the ability to have the new building, are going to help us attract and grow our faculty so that we can accommodate more students and we will likely have more degree programs, Amato said. We're likely going to be developing new classes and new graduate degree programs, too. That's right, the SSCDS will have its own building, which Amato hopes to start work on this year. The entity formerly known as the Department of Computer Science still needs to go through the process of selecting an architecture firm, so details have yet to be confirmed. Amato also knows the building will be between the National Center for Supercomputing Applications and the Thomas M. Seibel Center for Computer Science along North Goodwin Avenue, and will be connected to both of those buildings. Rather than classrooms, the building will likely hold faculty and student office space, as well as a large space for workshops, receptions, and other events. That's one of the things we'll probably also use our resources for, to have more workshops that bring researchers from across campus and from across the world here, Amato said. Other than the building, that's exactly what the money is intended for, funding multidisciplinary projects and being able to get research off the ground. Amato said that often the computer science field is moving faster than the academics can apply for funding for their research. With the rate of change and things that are happening, if we need to start up a study or do something really quickly, we'll be able to do that, she said. Granger Dean Rashid Bashir said that computing and data science have become a third pillar in the field of engineering alongside physical sciences and mathematical sciences, so he is excited to elevate that discipline at the U of I. Computing, data science, and AI, broadly speaking, is really changing everything we do, how we educate, how we treat people from a healthcare perspective. It's changing businesses, it's affecting agriculture, it's affecting manufacturing, it's affecting all industries, he said. We want to continue to do foundational work in computing and data science, but also collaborate and expand across the campus in partnerships. MTD okays $20,000 for airline incentive. The Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit District Board has decided to commit $20,000 to help Willard Airport secure leisure service to a new destination. The University of Illinois, which owns the airport, has offered a first-come, first-served minimum revenue guarantee of $500,000 for service to any airport in Florida, Phoenix, or Las Vegas. Willard officials have been working to raise a community match of $500,000 so the airport can offer a total minimum revenue guarantee of at least $1 million. In addition to the amount provided by the university, commitments from other public entities, including the MTD, Champaign, Urbana, Savoy, and Champaign County, total $180,000. According to the airport director, Tim Bannon, the university has committed that its funds will be used first ahead of the community match, and any leftover community funds will be returned. In addition to public entities, he said that the airport has met with over 30 private stakeholders, though they cannot make any funding announcements regarding those conversations at this time. Bannon added that while the airport's initial deadline for funding commitments was April 1st, they are still accepting contributions and will continue to do so even after meeting with airlines on May 21st and 22nd. Until the contract is signed with an incoming airline, this process remains ongoing, he told the MTD board on Wednesday. MTD board member Alan Nudo said that while he supports the minimum revenue guarantee, he does not think the incentive should be a one-time project. Instead, he would like to see the MTD University and other entities consider the airport's needs every year and see if they need to replenish the fund. Bannon replied that while he could not speak for the university's plans, Willard officials feel that it is best to focus on meeting their present goal before moving on to the next. Building on success is a very good strategy, he said. Building money today, having a successful campaign, successfully recruiting and starting and sustaining an airline, I think that'll bring us to the next problem of how do we get the next one going. Your approach is correct, Nudo said. Information sought on missing 14-year-old. Police are asking for the community's help as they seek to locate a 14-year-old who left home on Sunday and has not returned. The Urbana Police Department responded to the 2000 block of Country Squire Sunday after a report of a missing teenager. Tiago Zumarrago Mosquera, 14, left home around 8 a.m. to run an errand, police said. His mother contacted the police after he did not return, and the department has been working to locate him. According to the police department, Tiago contacted his mother via Facebook Messenger at 6 p.m. Monday and told her he was in the Urbana-Champaign area, but refused to come home. The teenager, Tiago Zumarraga Mosquera, is a 6'1", 160-pound Latino, 14-year-old with black hair and brown eyes, police said. He was last seen wearing khaki shorts and a khaki hooded sweatshirt. Tiago may also be in possession of a red rolling suitcase and white backpack. Tiago speaks Spanish and limited English and is a refugee of Ecuador. Community members who spot the teen should call 911. Police also ask that anyone with additional information call 217-384-2320. Arrangements can be made for the information to be shared privately. Anyone who wishes to remain anonymous can also submit tips to Crime Stoppers at 217-373-TIPS, which is 217-373-8477. 373tips.com or the P3Tips mobile app. The teacher of the week is Cameron Zindar, Social Studies, Muhammad Seymour. Learning from the past. Cameron Zindars doesn't simply stand at the front of the classroom and lecture in his social studies classroom at Muhammad Seymour High School. In his fourth year teaching in his hometown, the 12-year teaching veteran makes sure his students engage in his lessons in the hope that they'll become excited about the subject matter. Mr. Zindars is passionate about teaching students the importance of history and what role it can play in their future, Principal Chad Benedict said. He encourages critical thinking and wants his students to understand that there are multiple avenues for them to contribute to the democratic process. I find my work important because a healthy education system is the best way to provide opportunities for all. As Horace Mann said, education is the great equalizer of the conditions of men. It is important to me to invest deeply in our posterity, even more so now that I have my own children. I became a teacher because we spent most of the hours of our day working, and I had to have meaning and purpose in whatever professional endeavor I pursued. Teaching seemed like an obvious way for me to find purpose in helping others. My favorite or most unique lesson that I teach is, any unit or lesson helps students see the world through a new lens. I really enjoy my human geography unit, in which students plan and budget a trip to South America. They are forced to problem solve, research, and learn about other cultures. Hopefully it gives them travel aspirations for their future. My most fulfilling moments on the job are when I see students grow in their belief in themselves. I keep students engaged by, in my current history class, students are given 13 unit options in which they get to vote as a class on which units are most interesting to them. Most of my classes connect to current events, both in the U.S. and the world, and that certainly helps students see the relevance of what they are learning. I also work really hard creating analogies and ways of connecting content to my students' lives. Something else I'm passionate about is my faith, family, Fighting Illini sports, and fantasy football. My favorite teacher and subject to study in school was Professor Dr. Hartman, Illinois State University, History. If I weren't a teacher, I would be a fantasy football analyst. $5 billion stadium plan unveiled. About $1.5 billion in taxpayer dollars sought to cover infrastructure costs. Pritzker and legislative leaders stand opposed. The Chicago Bears unveiled a nearly $5 billion proposal Wednesday for an enclosed stadium next door to their current dome home at Soldier Field as part of a major project that would transform the city's lakefront, and they are asking for public funding to help make it happen. The plan calls for $3.2 billion for the new stadium, plus an additional $1.5 billion in infrastructure. The team and the city said the project would add green and open space while improving access to the city's museum campus and could also include a publicly owned hotel. This is not an easy project, but Chicago doesn't like it easy, Bears President Kevin Warren said. The announcement at Soldier Field comes during a busy week for the Bears. They are expected to take 2022 Heisman Trophy winner Caleb Williams with the number one pick in the draft on Thursday night and bank on the USC quarterback to solidify a position that has long been a sore spot for the founding NFL franchise. The team said the last month it was prepared to offer more than $2 billion in funding toward a publicly owned stadium in the city. The proposal calls for $2.025 billion from the Bears, $300 million from an NFL loan, and $900 million in bonds from the Illinois Sports Facilities Authority. The funding from the ISFA would involve extending bonds of the existing 2% hotel tax. The Bears said the project would generate $8 billion in economic impact for the region. It would be built in three phases and take up to 5 years. The new stadium would be constructed on a parking lot just south of Soldier Field, the Bears' home since 1971. The team's lease at the 100-year-old stadium runs through 2033. Mayor Brandon Johnson gave a full-throated endorsement, saying the project is in line with Daniel Burnham's plan of Chicago. He said there would be no tax hikes or new taxes for Chicago residents. Renderings show the Bears Stadium would have a translucent roof and massive glass panels that would bring in sunlight and allow for views of Chicago's famed skyline. The plan is to host major concerts throughout the year, as well as Super Bowls, Final Fours, and Big Ten championship games. Though Soldier Field's famed colonnades will be preserved, the spaceship stadium that was installed in the renovation 2 decades ago will be torn out and replaced by playing fields as well as park space. The plan calls for a pedestrian mall, food and beverage options, a promenade, and plaza. My administration insisted that any new project, especially one on the public land, must deliver strong public benefit and public use for the city of Chicago. And I am pleased today that this plan does exactly that, Johnson said. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker, however, said he wasn't on board. I remain skeptical about the proposal, and I wonder whether it's a good deal for the taxpayers, Pritzker told reporters Wednesday at an unrelated news conference. I'm not sure this is among the highest priorities for taxpayers. Illinois' top legislative leaders were also doubtful. If we were to put this issue on the board for a vote right now, it would fail, and it would fail miserably, Illinois House Speaker Emmanuel Chris Welch said at an unrelated news conference. There is no environment for something like this today. However, he added that the environment in Springfield does change. The proposal comes as two other Chicago sports teams, including the White Sox and Red Stars, have expressed interest in public funding for new stadiums. This has been Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette, Part 1, for Thursday, April 25th, 2024. Please stay tuned for Part 2.